Good morning.
Good morning.
The scripture reading today is, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. I was drawn to this this reading because the part that said all, because I always thought it was the good things, but it's all things to work together, because there's good and bad in our lives. So the when Paul asked me to speak about 8 months ago, I said, you know, you should make this, like, you should assign everybody and then just tell them on this Sunday, it's you that's going to give the speech, right? Because you're thinking about it a lot, what would people find interesting, etc. So it's... My sermon's going to have a lot about coincidences, and actually this summer, Christina Dumke gave a very wonderful sermon on the beach about our stories and how our stories make up our lives. So it made me start thinking about my stories and the different bends in the road, and of course, Yogi Berra gave us that wisdom that you come to a fork in the road, take it. And, you know, we all have those forks in the road, those different signposts. So I started thinking about mine. And also, Robert Frost, his last stanza of The Road Less Traveled, it said, "I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference." So as I was thinking about the roads, and think about the different choices that we've made in ours. So the choices we make all the difference, and today I'll be sharing some of the turns in my road as I work on my life's message. So I'm a huge believer that there are no coincidences in our lives, and God uses what we call coincidences to help guide us into a fulfilling and enriched lives. Albert Einstein said, "Coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous." And as a friend of mine has said forever, there are no coincidences. So I'm going to share three stories from my life today. I'm going to talk about my mom, my son, and the aortic dissection that I had last November 1st. And so that for those of you that are sleeping and just listen for the aortic dissection, you'll say, good, he's in the gun lap. So it's about time to come back. Anyway, my mom was just a wonderful, wonderful woman. Probably the most religious person I ever met. But she reminded me, there's a great quote that they attribute to St. Francis. It said, "Preach the gospel every day. Use words if necessary." That was the way my mom lived her life. She was just kind, loving, just unbelievable. And we were incredibly close. She was very sick when I was 12. And I remember just thinking, because I had been a rotten kid up to 12 and always crying and giving pride, allergies and problems, stuff. And it hit me, and I said, after that, I am never, ever going to be bad. So I'm sure she had some sleepless nights, but not very many. I mean, not over me. My sister filled in that for her. I was always at home on time and really never got in trouble or anything. Just pretty good kid along those lines. But it was 12 that was sort of my turning point. So anyway, April 9th of 1997, she was diagnosed with cancer, and they said she's only got 2 months to live. And I'll tell you, I thought I had stomach cancer the whole time. I mean, I have so much respect for people who caring for people who have cancer, these things, the people they love so much. Like I said, my mom died 2 months later. But during that time, I really thought that I was going to die. I was so sick all the time. But anyway, I said, "Mom, is there anything at all you'd like to do?" And I said, "Do you want to go to Hawaii? Do you want to, you know?" And she said, "No." She said, "You know, the only thing that I'd like to do," she said, "I would really like to see your kid's house, because we'd been putting a big addition on our house up in Vermont, And she said, but I'm just way too weak to be able to do that. And so basically I said, Mom, if you want to do that, I'm going to figure out a way to do it. And I had no idea, how do you rent an airplane? I had no idea that there were hundreds of airports all over the country. So there was actually an airport 4 miles from her house, Lakeland, Florida, that we'd never heard of. I didn't know there was an airport up at Rutland, Vermont. And so we worked it all out. She came up Memorial Day weekend, and I was actually able to take the car right out of the tarmac, pick her up with my, you know, the rest of the family. And I said, man, this is so cool. I mean, it's like this is just a cool way to travel. So anyway, she got, we went back home. She actually died on June 9th, and her last, she gave me two gifts. I'll talk about the second one in a second, but I was in her doorway, and my dad and sister were at the dining room table, and she was in one of those chairs, lazy boy chairs, and all of a sudden, she rose. She rose just this part of her body because she was so weak, and she looked really frightened. She looked so scared, and I've never seen my mom look scared in her entire life. And I said to my dad and sister, "Come quick!" And then she got this unbelievable look of peacefulness. I mean, she just smiled. And it was like she understood, and she looked, like I said, she was looking right past me. Let me tell you, there were some guys in the room. They were like, I was sort of the guy here. The spirit came to her, I'm just sure. And she got, like I said, she looked so contented, and she slumped down, and that's when she died. And I, of course they missed it, but I was able to be just at the right time, right place, and it was unbelievable. So I, that was one gift to be there as she was passing away. And then the second gift was the gift of flight, because it just happened that I had a sabbatical that summer. And we used to work at Microsoft, we worked doggy years. I mean, every day was 18-hour days and weekends, and you'd go to the kids' event, and then you'd be working the whole weekend and stuff. But anyway, so I had this great sabbatical for 2 months, and we were doing some family travel. And then I also said, geez, I should go back with a skill. So I started learning how to fly and all this stuff. But I didn't finish it off that summer. And I'll tell you, learning to fly is a pain. You get some really hard landings. You get sometimes the wind will blow you off the runway. I mean, it's pretty exciting. But actually, it was also good to bring you back to reality, because these flight instructors, people were actually, I used to run New York and New Jersey, so people actually treated me with a little bit of respect. I mean, the people who worked for you and stuff, they didn't always yell at you and tell you, stuff. I mean, let me tell you, flight instructors bring you right back to, like reality. You idiot, what are you doing? Fire with my arm. So I'm going, oh, that's a nice way of putting it. So anyway, and I wasn't sure that I would go back and learn and finish my pilot's license the following year, because, like I said, we're working doggy hours, and it was around the clock. Anyway, so we just happened to be splitting up the district that year, and the guys in New Jersey who worked for me were going to report to another general manager, the foreman of the district, and I was going to keep New York. Anyway, as a farewell gift, my management team there gave me 30 hours of flight training, because they called up an instructor and said, how many more hours do you think it'll get them over the hump? And so then I said, geez, I've got to get this thing. So my mom got me started on it. The other things that came in did it. And since I've had my pilot's license, I've been able to do a lot of good. I've flown probably close to 100 angel flights, and been able to take a lot of people up. And as I say to people, when you're up there at 5,000 feet, you think about all the mountains that people climb to get a certain view and stuff. Well, from 5,000, 6,000 feet, that is the way I believe that God is looking down and seeing the world. And so, you know, I always say, you know, you're a little vain when you said it is good. You know, I mean, once he did it. But as you look at it, you go, hey, I'd be feeling pretty proud if I had, you know, all the water and the leaves, and it's just phenomenal. So that was those coincidences of just happening to, you know, my mom, who never did any extravagant, you know, wanting to go to Vermont. The guys giving me that gift really enriched my life and a lot of other people's lives along those lines. So the next, let's see. Good, we're going through these pages like crazy here. The next coincidence or event was when I retired from Microsoft in 2004. I'll never forget it. There were some personnel things going on, and I didn't think management was doing the right things and certain things. So anyway, I went up to Albany December 15th, and a peace came over me, just a complete peace came over me. I said to my boss, I said, you know, God just gave me a message. I said, he told me to retire. And I'm not unhappy at all. I said I'm at such peace with this decision. And I said, I know everybody's going to be calling tomorrow and saying, hey, you know, do you want to do something else or whatever? But I said, just let everybody know I'm at peace. And do you want me to leave, you know, today for 15th? Or I said I could stay till February 6th. I said you know, that way I could finish appraisals and reviews and all this stuff. But I said, you know, basically it's your guys' decision, whichever one you want to do. And they wanted me to stay as long as possible. So I didn't retire officially until February 6th. But I really wasn't sure what I was going to do. I said, maybe I'll just, you know, enjoy life, do nothing. And which is basically what I decided to do. But then I got a call in March from my son's girlfriend's mother. And she said, John's doing drugs. And I said, sadly enough, I said, yeah, I know. We've been fighting John about doing drugs since he was 14. I mean, you know, it's something you try to get over. But she said, no, this is serious. This is heroin. And I was a business guy. And I said, you know, just like any other problem, that's what, you know, okay, it's another problem that we're going to solve together. And boy, was I naive, because heroin is very, very hard to solve. And anyway, so I went to Australia. We got him he admitted to me, you know, while I was there, and we, you know, bonding and stuff. We got him on medication to get him back to New York. I shouldn't say New York, Minnesota, which is where he went to Hazleton. And so over the next 19 months, he got an MBA in drug treatment. You know, he went to all of the, there was at least five different 30-day programs, lots of halfway houses, and homeless. And I thought when I wrote for this, you know, the homeless part, you go, how could you ever have your kid homeless? Well, it's interesting because, you know, when I had my little Johnny, 2 years old, 3 years old, you know, all the way up, you'd say, geez, you'd never, ever have your kid homeless. But the problem with drugs is that it does take over their lives, and you can't have them in your house with you because they steal everything. I mean, it's a very, very hard thing. And like I said, if you ever have told me all the way up until Johnny was homeless that my child would ever be homeless, it's just a tough thing. But anyway, I do believe that God's gift to me when he said, you know, it's time to retire, and thank God I have such a wonderful wife. She I called her that day, you know, so it's like, anything new? Yeah, I retired today. Well, a little different day, but anyway, and she was great. Okay. So anyway, and that of course was the hardest job of my life. So for those 19 months, we got him from place to place, situation to situation. We talked about the fact that, you know, if you keep doing these drugs, you could die sometime. And you know, you never really believe it till it happens. And anyway, and John did die actually November 29th, 2006. And many of you were here for the service on December 3rd, and we still thank you so much for your love and support and kindness during all that. Some of the key learnings, you know, it is funny if you are fortunate enough to have perfect kids like our Jackie. Of course, I always say it was too bad that Jackie was in the whole situation with us and John, because I do think in the back of her mind, she felt like if she was as rotten as John had been in many of these situations, that I would become an axe murderer. So she was always on the straight and narrow, but it was a hard time. The one thing, though, that throughout that whole process, Karen and I and Jackie and everybody close to Johnny loved him with all our hearts. It was true, unconditional love. And I always think that is the way that God loves us. I mean, because most of us, even though we get upset with ourselves when we sin, we do bad things, and, you know, we beg for forgiveness, etc., We don't do as terrible things as people who are trying to get drugs and stuff like that. And like I said, when we could still love him with all our hearts, all our soul, every day, try to help him, I do think that's the kind of love that God has for us. And that was a good learning. The other good learnings is for those that don't have kids that have drugs and do have perfect children, don't give advice to people that have drugs on how to raise their children, because you really have no idea. I mean, it's so wonderful when you got a kid that you go, oh, I'm going to take your car away from you for 2 days, and they're perfect for the rest of the year. And when you have kids with drugs, it's just it's so hard. And we learned a lot. Actually, I encourage your friends, because there's a lot of this stuff out there, to go to Al-Anon. I think that saved Karen's and my minds, because you could be at Al-Anon with all these other people that are going through what you're going through, and it was a lot of insights and a lot of help going through all that. So, as I said, John died of the overdose. You know, another interesting thing. When I say interesting thing, gosh, we were crushed, because it's the most painful thing in the world. I couldn't go to any of the services for people who died, and for about 5 years. And I came, I finally was able to go to Jim Weiser's service, and I was down here, and I went up to the balcony, and I'm just crying my eyes out. I mean, you know, and Jim's in his 90s, and Haviland, Whitcomb, you know, came up, and she's like looking at me, because I'm distraught, and you know, she's like, geez, the guy's 90. I mean, hey, it's a pretty good life. I mean, and I couldn't get out of my mind, because Jim lost his son when his son was 16, and Jim said he could never go to another funeral. You know, and so I said he's finally able to see his son again. You know, after, so anyway, I was in bad shape. Anyway, but we do have a very close church, a very, very loving church. So one of the things that, and by the way, we do have a scholarship fund that's helping kids going through what John's going through at Outward Bound. And so, some of his good work go on, and his friends, he meant a lot to them. I speak at a program, or work at a program called Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship. Its acronym is NIFTY, and we work with inner city kids. And so I always tell them, I've got to think about the 10 things it takes to be successful in business. And one of the things I talk about is that you really need to work on improving yourself physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally every day. And I then talk more about the spiritual part, because I said, you know, you might be going through life and not have any issues, you are going to have times when it's your spiritual life is what's going to carry you forward. So you need to work on that. So you've got a close thing. And the other thing, of course, I do is I tell them don't do drugs. And of course, they're looking at me as rich white kid, white guy from the suburbs or whatever. What does this guy know about it? And then I tell them Johnny's story, and you know they all have kids, and it's we're all there bonding. It's a tough story. Last for those, just thought I'd talk a little bit about November 1st, 2014, aortic dissection. That way people can wake up. It's funny when Karen wants to get my attention. I'm being a pilot. All she has to do is every plane has a tail number. So we'll be up there. I'll be listening to Sinatra. I'll be whatever. And when they say 137 Bravo Kilo, I come alive, right? It's like, I get fixated because I know they're going to tell me either there's a plane coming toward me or something's going on, So anyway, whenever Karen wants to get my attention, she goes 137 Bravo Kilo. So what's happening? What's happening? And that morning, talk about wonderful coincidences. I was going to take Paul and Laura up to Syracuse that morning to see Parker, and it was bad weather. So I called them up and said, "Hey, it's not going to work." And they understood and took off driving early in the morning. And then I got an unbelievable pain in my chest, and it ripped down into my stomach. And it was just unbelievable, the pain. And I said to Karen, I said, I'll just rest or whatever. And she immediately, thank God that she did. By the way, if you don't watch that television show, it's called Investigative ID. A lot of times the women go, "Oh yeah, I don't think anything's bad going on," right? And the guy dies. So anyway, so what? So if your spouse doesn't call, you'll be fine. Take some Pepto Bismol. It's probably a bad sign. But she immediately called 911, and she is so cool under pressure. She also knew to call up. Like my doctor, I'm thinking, why would she call my doctor? I mean, I didn't even know, right? But she called up my doctor, and he did a great job. And by the way, I got my doctor through Bill Grabe, who is not here today, but a member of the church, and about 5-6 years ago. And this guy kept after the emergency room doctors going, "This guy is healthy as a horse. Test the next thing, test the next thing, test the next thing." It took about 4.5 hours to figure out, that I had this aortic dissection, and anyway, so it was a blessing that he was pressing on. It was also a blessing. Karen called up lots of people to pray, and I do think that the prayers, helped a lot. A lot of people wonder about that. I think that it helped so much. So anyway, when they finally figured out what it was, the physician came and said, "It's really bad news." I was with Jackie and Karen there, and he said, "If you have any last things that you'd like to say, now is the time to say them." And so I asked Karen not to bring a date to the funeral. And no, I didn't. I didn't. I played it pretty straight. I played it pretty straight. I just told him how lucky my life had always been, how fortunate I was, and how great they were in my whole life to have them a part of it, and how wonderful the church has been, et cetera. So anyway, then they got me over to, Karen said, "Well, should we go to Yale?" And they said, "I'll never make it to Yale." And that's how we got to St. Vincent's, and we got a Dr. DeMeo there. He was waiting for us, and he was just a marvelous surgeon, because I've heard different numbers. 10% people survive this, as high as 50%, I guess, depending on what it is. But basically, it's what got John Ritter and the other guy. So, the thing on the prayer angle, Gary Player once won a tournament, and one of the people said to Gary Player, said, you know, can't believe how lucky you got to win that tournament. And he said, yep. He said, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And I believe that about prayer, too. The harder you pray, the luckier you get with prayer. It's an important thing. So, boy, I tell you, whipping right through, this is great. The last thing I'm going to share with you, because I thought about it in all these situations, and, you know, relationship with God and prayer and thinking about the family. There's probably many of you have heard this, but it's called the Footprints Prayer. And it goes like this. One night I had a dream. I dreamed I was walking along the beach with the Lord, and across the sky flashed scenes from my life. For each scene, I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand. One belonged to me and the other to the Lord. When the last scene of my life flashed before us, I looked back at the footprints in the sand. I noticed that many times along the path of my life, there was only one set of footprints. I also noticed that it happened at the very lowest and saddest times in my life. This really bothered me, and I questioned the Lord about it. Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you would walk with me all the way. But I have noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there's only one set of footprints. I don't understand why in times when I needed you the most, you should leave me. The Lord replied, my precious, precious child, I love you and I would never leave you. During those times of trial and suffering, when you saw only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. And I said, probably a lot of you have heard it, but that meant a lot to me when I heard it years ago. And I've always felt lucky, and I've always known the times when God was carrying me. And I can assure you, when Johnny died, there was a lot of carrying. You know, there's a thing along those lines. In the Jewish tradition, there's a thing called sitting Shiva. It lasts about 7 days. And it was interesting. I don't think I breathed for 7 days. Your lungs, you're not alive. It was amazing. And so, anyway, about the seventh day, I think I was able to breathe again. And over time, I was able to go to funerals. I have been lucky, and I've always felt like God was there. So Lord, please help each of us to embrace the many wonderful coincidences you put into our lives to make us better, more loving, and caring people. That's it. Thank you.